That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
And we'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football's Family Podcast. And we do deal with a lot of current events on this show, but I'm going to talk with somebody today who is football history oriented. And that's what I love about this show as well. It's like we do talk football history. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Jeremy. Tom Pollan. And I've been a kind of a student of football history, sports history all my life. I grew up reading about sports, reading about the history of baseball and football. Growing up in Chicago, you become a Bears fan. I mean, the city is split during the summer between the Cubs and White Sox, depending on what side of the city you live on. But it all comes to together under the Bears banner when football season starts. So,
do you know the Super Bowl shuffle?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, God, I have that whole season on videotape.
Oh, you have the games still?
I have the games, yeah.
Commercials and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That season, Richard Dent was from TSU, which is just down the road from me. My dad and my sister actually attended TSU, and the idea of having somebody as good playing for that team is just awesome. The 85 Bears were, I believe they had the 4-6 defense,
mm-hmm.
really set the bar for what a defense can do. And every defense that were pretty good from that point on, the Ravens, the Buccaneers, you could go down the line. They were always compared to the 85 Bears for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to still be the premium for defenses.
What I love about the 85 Bears, and I don't think it was a good thing for them, but Mike Ditka got carried off the field, as one should, and then their defensive coordinator, Rex Ryan, did that too. Rex Ryan was the son. Buddy Ryan, yes, you're right. I saw that when I was like, oh, that had to start some problems. And it was already happening, wasn't it?
Oh, they were already, yeah, it was already happening.
So, Buddy, I think Buddy went on from, was it that next year or the year after that, he went to Arizona, which was the Phoenix Cardinals at that point.
He went to Philadelphia.
He went to Philadelphia. Did he coach the Cardinals, or am I thinking of somebody different?
Oh, I don't think he did coach the Cardinals.
Then I don't know who I'm thinking of. So that kind of tells you where my head is right now. I'm thinking, let's see here. Buddy Ryan, he did coach the Eagles, which I thought was a good fit because that was the body bag type.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So according to Google, sponsor me, Google, the Buddy Ryan did coach. He coached the Philadelphia Eagles from 86 to 90.
Yeah.
And the Arizona Cardinals from 94 to 95.
Yes.
So he did do that. He did. Yes.
He was in Arizona.
Because I remember them recording a commercial for him flipping over a Gatorade, table full of Gatorade cups. So I remember that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we are way off. But that's okay. That's what we can do.
Yeah.
You're a Bears fan, and Bears were pretty much the Cardinals, in fact, in Chicago, were one of the founding organizations of the to become the NFL. The Bears were not in Chicago. They were elsewhere.
Yeah, they came out of Decatur, Illinois. A.E. Staley, which is a cornstarch company, and the owner of the company wanted a team, and that's all professional football was at that time, was a bunch of loosely organized teams and leagues that really did not have a central rulemaking authority or schedule making authority. You basically went through and you bragged about the games you won, and you kind of made claim to your own title. So it was a wild start for the NFL, for the what was it? Oh God, APFA. What? I can't remember what the acronym for APFA was.
Oh yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
All professional, Professional Football Association. And yeah, 2 years later, they decided he changed the name to the NFL.
Which is good.
Yeah, it really
Which is
was.
good. Okay, let me dig in here. Because talking to a Bears fan, you've had success for a long time in the 60s. You had, I think, in the same draft, you drafted two Hall of Famers.
Yes.
And that was in, what was that year? That was the Gale Sayers and the Dick
That was
Butkus draft.
65. Gale
Yes.
Sayers and Dick Butkus.
First round draft picks, if I remember correctly,
Yep.
both of them. One from Kansas and Dick Butkus, he went to Illinois where
Yep.
George
Went to
Halas went to,
Illinois. Yep.
where George Halas went to. And I've had some issues with Gale Sayers. I'm trying. Gale Sayers, to me, if he had played longer, would have probably been the best running back in NFL history. He was just that
Yeah,
good.
he
But
was.
I compare him now to Terrell Davis. I grew up a Broncos fan, and
Yeah,
I remember Terrell
right.
Davis. And how is Gale Sayers and Terrell Davis in the NFL or in the Hall of Fame? And the answer I keep getting is you don't necessarily have to have a career-long awesomeness. But if you are the best in 4 or 5 years in a row, you're considered great for the NFL or for the Hall of
Yeah.
Fame. So Terrell Davis, Gale Sayers.
Well, see, I've always, when I rank my Hall of Fame class every year, who should get in, who should get busted, one of my criteria is this player one of the best over the course of his career? Did he dominate his position over the course of his career? And yeah, Terrell Davis and Gale Sayers did not have long careers, but they were above and beyond. They transcended the sport, basically,
Now,
as running back. Terrell Davis, his 3 year 3 year period was just incredible. Yeah.
two Super Bowls, a 2,000-yard rushing career. Now,
Yeah.
back up, because how you worded that is absolutely perfect, and I should word my statements how they played their career. And usually, when I think of career, I think of 10, 12 years. But what if your career is 4 years and you dominate those 4 years?
Right.
That I like that. That makes a lot of sense. So
See,
you
I think the Pro Football Hall of Fame is actually getting around to that point because it took them a while to get Terrell Davis in. It took them a while to get 49ers linebacker. God, I can't remember his name now. Just devastating middle linebacker.
He actually, Willis, Patrick
Yes.
Willis, he's
Yes.
actually from a town real close to me,
Yeah.
and they have a sign that when you go into the town, it says home of Patrick Willis.
Really?
Yeah, Patrick Willis is not only one of the best players I've ever seen play at position. Of course, it wasn't long, but he was apparently
I wrote about him as a linebacker, that he hit, he was every bit the hitter and the linebacker that guys like Butkus, Nitschke, and other greats were. He was just dominant. at his position. And, you know, I loved watching him play, but he retired early.
He did. And
Tony Baselli had to retire early because of his knee problems.
To me, when he got drafted by the Jags, like, why do you take a tackle that high in the draft? There's a reason why you take a tackle that high in the draft, because he could be Tony Baselli. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised when you mentioned that. I was like, I was surprised it took him that long to be in the Hall of Fame. It's hard to judge a tackle or a guard good enough to be in the Hall of Fame, but you don't judge necessarily what they do. You judge who's behind them.
Yeah.
Is the quarterback good? The running back good? There you go.
It is tough for tackles because they don't have the counting stats.
No. You talk about pancake blocks. That really doesn't show anything.
No.
And now they have such metrics that they can see who you should have blocked and if that block got through. They didn't have those back then.
Right.
But going back to that, your Bears from a span of in the 60s, maybe not so much the 70s, but going into the 80s, you've had a wealth of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking your quarterbacks, that's something you lacked a little bit.
That's something we never have got right. Yes.
Now I am a huge Jay Cutler fan. I do own one Bears jersey, and it's the number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people I'm a Cutler fan, and they look at me like I've grown 2 heads, and maybe I have. Maybe I have. But he's from Vanderbilt, which again is down the road from
right.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that if they should have made that Super Bowl that year when he got hurt, his knee got hurt. I thought, yeah. Dude, you got to get back in that game. You were winning. You were beating the Packers.
Yeah.
I remember where I was watching. I was like, Jay, get back in that game. You will forever be known as the guy. Because Rex Grossman took you to a Super Bowl.
Yes.
Against the Colts. And I'm like, you would have made the Super Bowl, dude. I know it hurts, but you've got to get back in there and try something.
Yeah, that was just rough to see. That was just a rough game overall. And it took a couple of weeks to get over.
I'm sure it takes more than that for a
but,
Bears fan. So, okay, your city, you grew up in Chicago, right?
Yeah, well, north of Chicago, but basically the metropolitan area. Yeah.
We're north.
I grew up in Waukegan, which is about 60 miles north.
Algonquin is where my friend is from in that area.
Oh,
so
yeah.
so mm-hmm. I so you we've had to remind him since he moved to Tennessee to slow down. We don't talk that fast.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So in Chicago, you have the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other team to the Blackhawks, right?
Right.
You have the North Side and the South Side, the White Sox and the Cubs.
Cubs. Mm-hmm.
You have the Bulls. Is that still the team of Chicago?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, you're still living off the 90s, aren't y'all?
Oh, yeah. You know it.
And then you got the Bears. The Bears come over from Decatur. They were the Staleys.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had to keep that name for another year when they
One
moved
year.
over.
Yeah.
And then, if I remember the story correctly, Halas changed it to the Bears because football players are bigger than baseball players and the Cubs are smaller than Bears. So he said Bears. Is that close?
Yeah, that's pretty close, but he was a big Cubs fan.
Oh, he was a big Cubs fan.
Yeah, he was a Cubs fan.
Now, he so, played, where did he,
that's
did
why
he play?
They played at Wrigley Field.
He played at Wrigley Field. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he, playing at Wrigley Field, obviously there's a difference in the way the football stadiums are built now compared to what it was built. Were they able to get a lot of people in, or was that still kind of like, it's still baseball over everything else?
It was still kind of baseballish. They were able to put in some bleachers along the side. But overall, no, it was still about 35 to 40,000, depending on, you know, if you had standing room. So, yeah, but at that time, that wasn't that bad.
Now, Halas was not independently wealthy, was he?
No, he wasn't.
How
No,
did
he
he
worked
keep the
hard to get that team going.
Yeah, how did he keep the team together? I mean, I know that the Maras were wealthy due to other things, and I think the Rooneys were also wealthy to do to other things. And I know later on with With the AFC or the AFL, you have you have wealthy people, the Hiltons and the Adams and other people like that. How did he keep those things going?
He hustled quite a bit. He had a couple of partners, and he worked his butt off to promote the team in Chicago. He would play on Sunday, the team would play. He would type up accounts of the game and run them to, I think it was seven newspapers in town at the time. So he would run them to each newspaper and hand them in and hope that he got even two paragraphs in the Monday paper describing the game. But Dutch Sternemann was his partner. And actually, Halas almost lost the Bears to Dutch Sternemann at one point, but he was able to hold on and keep the team. He was also frugal. He was not, one of these guys who, Ditka once said Halas threw around nickels like manhole covers. it's
Well, because this was back in the 20s, correct?
yeah.
Hollis was not from a wealthy family, obviously. He
No.
worked at the at Indicator. He was the coach. They made him the coach, but
Well, they didn't. He didn't actually work there. He was brought in to be the
oh, he
head
was brought
football
in
team.
to he was brought in to be the head. Okay. Was he a World War One veteran?
Yes, he was.
He was. So he saw a lot of stuff. And even though it was a year, I still have, I've never been in combat, but a year probably feels like 10,
I
in
would say
combat.
probably.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never been either, but
I respect that. I mean, if you have to do it, you have to do it. I respect men and women who do that. What, speaking of which, help me out with this because again, I know a little bit about Chicago history, but you do, enough, more, a lot more. Why do they call it Soldier Field? I've heard different stories.
It was a World War I memorial. So that's what it was built for.
Is it that outside area? You have the behind it, you have the stadium in the outside area?
Well, that the bowl part came later. It was actually built the way you played it. It was most of the seats were in the end zone, and then fewer seats along the sideline. So, and that was one of the problems with Soldier Field. But it was built as a World War One memorial, not expected to be a football stadium, although it did host football games, college, high school, and actually hosted a lot of a couple of heavyweight title fights. The second Jack Dempsey, Gene Tunney fight took place at Soldier Field. So it had a lot of different events. It was a very large stadium for seating. Just got to the point where it wasn't very good for football seating, but it's the best stadium they had in Chicago to move forward with.
Did the if I remember this correctly, I think it was in a book, the NFL 100. I forgot who wrote it, but the former president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which is a fantastic book if you've not read that. It might not have been, it might have been talking about the Polo Grounds in New York or Yankee Stadium. Well, playing at Wrigley Field might have been the only thing they could do. I'm sure that the locker rooms and the situations were not made for that.
Yeah, no. Well, of course, they were also smaller rosters. So
Well, that's
that
true.
did help too.
You played a lot of people playing the entire game, so that kind of helps. But can you imagine? Well, it's kind of like when the Ravens came back or the Browns came back or went to Baltimore and they played at Memorial Stadium. Nothing there was suited for football now. It was suited for the Colts back then, not for the Ravens now. I can't imagine that. That had to have been something to see. So why is it now that the Bears are the identity of Chicago? Like you live and breathe Bears.
Well, course, you had the Chicago Cardinals played in Comiskey Park on the South Side for a long time. Actually, they predate the Bears in Chicago.
Okay, yes.
But the Bears were had the better players, were won quite a bit in the 20s when the NFL got started through the 30s and the 1940s with Sid Luckman at quarterback. And the Cardinals really did not have a lot of success in the league in the standings every year. It was just rough. So the Bears were more successful. Halas promoted the team better. As I said, Halas used to write up when back in the time when nobody covered football game, pro football games. They didn't have a reporter covering the team. Halas used to run and get his game notices to all the newspapers. He hustled that way. They got on the most popular Chicago radio station, WGN, and got one of the most popular voices as far as broadcasters in Jack Brickhouse, who was an icon for the Chicago Cubs and was also the great announcer for the Chicago Bears for a long time. I forget his exact run as Bears announcer, but he had a long run as Bears announcer. So, everything Halas did basically off the field was popular. He had a lot to do with the Bears' popularity and the fact that they had that rich history. They had the rich history, the players, Red Grange, who signed right out of the University of Illinois in 1925. By the way, Red Grange basically saved the New York Giants from bankruptcy. They played two games in the Polo Ground, sold them out, and Wellington Mara was able to make enough money to keep the team going. But
But see, that's the thing about early NFL. And even when the NFL AFL merged, they had to realize that if we want to make this work, everybody has to do something. And I believe if I remember correctly, the AFL NFL, AFL had less teams, NFL more. A couple had to move over there and they didn't want to do that, so they got offered $1 million. I'm like, you know what? We're good with that.
We'll do it.
We're good with that. Baltimore being one of them. And
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh being the other. And I think Pittsburgh, the Rooneys wanted, was it the Mara's blessings, if I remember that correctly. I might be off on that. But even early on, how many teams went in and out of the NFL or pre-NFL and then NFL dissolved and reformed and moved around? Green Bay did that. It's just amazing. So you had to work with what you had. So not only were the Bears benefiting, but apparently the Giants were benefiting too.
That's one of the things the Bears did to help the Giants and other teams when they signed Red Grange because he was the big name, the Galloping Ghost, out of Illinois, and he was on the Bears. The Bears signed him.
We don't have nicknames like that anymore.
No, they don't. But that was revolutionary. Because one of the things that's always fascinated me about pro football and its growth is the college game was the game for the longest time. If you asked the average fan, they would tell you that their favorite college team or the best college teams in the country could beat the best NFL teams.
They're
And
probably
they truly
right.
believed it.
They're probably right. Here in Tennessee, Mr. Tom, I grew up a Vanderbilt Commodore fan, so I didn't really know a lot of winning at all. And when we moved down to Alabama, my kids were born in Tuscaloosa. I kind of moved toward them, but I've never been a college fan. When the Broncos played the Redskins in the Super Bowl that many years ago in 87, 88 timeframe, I started following the Broncos. So when the Titans came here in 99, 98, 99 in that area, and I knew they were coming, they went to Memphis and then came here. It was like I finally found somebody to follow. You had one just there. We finally got something here. And I remember Mike Keith, who is no longer the voice of the Titans, which, Mike, you're going to be loved regardless. He is now the voice of the Volunteers, which is where he wanted to be, and I respect him for that. He was asked one time, he was at a school and was asked, he basically was asked something like, the parents are never going to follow the Titans. Because, most people that I know grew up either, Bears fan. You remember the other ones, the Steelers fan because of Bradshaw and the 70s, and the Cowboys fans. Those are the three big ones in the country because of just longevity and power. And he said they may not follow it, but those kids who are in the seats in that school follows it. And that's how you grow a team. For you, it was given to you because you had people like Halas and Luckman and the Galloping Ghosts, and you had different people, and even in the 80s, I
That
don't.
80s,
Walter Payton is probably the best running back to ever play the game.
in my opinion, he is.
Well, what was it that Emmitt Smith was asked who the best player, best running back, and he said Walter Payton. And if Emmitt Smith tells you that it's Walter Payton, there's a good guess that it's Walter Payton. Walter Payton had an ability that I don't think too many people ever will have. To me, a person like Christian McCaffrey, if he was healthy, could almost get there. But Walter Payton was just a versatile player that I don't think we're ever going to get back.
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Well,
It's unfortunate, but
you're just not going to have that type of longevity. He played what since the 70, was it 75 or 76?
75.
75, he came out of college and then played well into the 80s.
86, I think, was his final year.
That's a long time for a running back.
It is.
And he had what, over 13,000 yards rushing?
And he carried a lot because in the 70s, when he came into the league, that's all the Bears had on offense. They didn't have a quarterback. They barely had any receivers. They had Walter Payton. He carried that team for quite a while.
He just to see how they get a team around a running back. You won't hear that either. I like the fact that we had Dinty being drafted in the top 10. I think he's a fantastic running back, but you will not hear that happen very often. Saquon Barkley was drafted pretty high up a few years ago, and look what he did this year. I think the running back position is undervalued now. And if you had somebody like Walter Payton in the backfield, you had to put what, seven, eight guys in the box to stop them. Well, when the Titans had Derrick Henry, that's exactly what they did. And they still couldn't stop the
Still
man.
couldn't stop him, right?
I like the way you are coming across and the way I'm looking at you are just, you love it. This is what you love doing. And you write some.
I wrote for quite a while for Football Nation, which unfortunately went out of business because I thought it was a growing website. And I've written for other sites, and but I have a WordPress site now, and I publish on there, and I still do some writing. And
Well, I'll tell you what, message me the WordPress website where you are, and I will put this on the show notes and we'll get that out.
okay, great.
Yeah, and any type of social media that you have, please put it on there and we'll get that out too.
Okay, will do.
You obviously know your stuff and you know your Bears. Now, let me ask you a couple questions because our time is running up here. Number one, your most favoritest memory of the Bears.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm trying to get your cogs a whirling.
Just has to be nearly everything about that 85 team was just so larger than life. And I think the Dallas game where Richard Dent tipped the ball to himself, turned into a touchdown,
I remember
and
that.
the Bears just completely dominated. a Dallas team that was actually pretty good. And at that point, I think everybody in Chicago knew we had something special going on.
You should have, it should have been a dynasty. It should
it
have been a
have,
done.
Yeah.
Buddy Ryan, if he had stayed, of course, I don't think him or Ditka could get along much more.
No, they couldn't.
But imagine, it's kind of like Jimmy Johnson. If he stayed, if Jerry Jones were smart to shut his mouth,
yep.
He won two Super Bowls with Johnson and one with Barry Switzer. But if he kept Johnson, how many years would they have won?
Would have won a lot more.
Would have won a lot more.
A
I
lot
mean, if
more.
you won, you see how well it is with Steve Spagnuolo and Andy Reid. Can you imagine if you just left Jimmy Johnson alone?
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine if Buddy Ryan, and I was calling him Rex because they're pretty much the same person.
Yes.
Oh, if you left Buddy Ryan, if Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka could get along, imagine how many Super Bowls y'all would have won up there in Chicago.
I know.
It would have
Yes.
been insane.
It would have.
My favorite memory of that year, I don't remember too much about it, but I remember playing Tecmo Bowl in that high five after you score a touchdown. That's from the Bears. That is Bears right there. If you don't know what that is, shame on y'all for not knowing the game Tecmo Bowl.
Oh God, yeah, that's bringing it out.
I actually still have the cartridge out in the shed. I'm not getting rid of that. I played that recently, and I know it's way off the subject. I played that recently and typed in the same codes that I used back then, and it shot me right back to what I was playing. It's awesome.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it works. But one thing, and I actually interviewed a guy, and I forgot right off the top of my head. I interviewed a guy who played during that time frame and was in the game. And I was like, I know who you are. It was a Raider. It was a Raider. But I love Walter Payton's hair. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It was just amazing. And I didn't realize that William Perry played for Clemson. I didn't
Yeah.
realize that. And I saw that. I thought, huh, makes sense, I guess. He was a good player playing for a good team. Now, one last thing, and then I got to wrap it up because of the time constraints. Do
Right.
you have any memorabilia that you value, like something special to you?
I wish I had more. I've never been able to really collect a lot of memorabilia. I have some football cards.
Okay.
I do have a Gale Sayers football card.
You do, huh?
Johnny Unitas football card. I have a program from the 1975 College All-Star Game, which they used to play every summer in Chicago in Soldier Field. They used to bring in the college all-stars, would play the champion from the previous NFL season. Before the Super Bowl era, they would play the defending NFL champion. And during the Super Bowl era, they would play the Super Bowl champion. And that went on until 1976, I think, was the last one.
And they did that in Chicago.
Yeah, did that in Chicago every year. And I went to the 75 game, the one where Walter Payton played. And I have the program for that.
Could you tell that he was special from just that watching that game?
Nah, it was a little rough on him in that game.
Was it?
Yeah.
He got over that pretty quick.
Oh, yes, he did.
If you were to see how many games have you seen in your life, like there?
Oh,
A few,
God.
more than two or three?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, for the 85 Bears, I was at the divisional round game against the Giants. I was there for the Fog Bowl.
Yeah, I was about to ask, were you there? How was that? How was that? I know we only got a couple minutes. How was that?
That was crazy because we were sitting in the northeast corner of the stadium, way up, you know, near the top of the stadium. And at halftime, the fog just started rolling in, and you expected it to stop at some point, and it never did. It just filled the entire stadium. You couldn't see anything. We were able to see maybe a corner of the end zone. So, and we knew Philadelphia was moving the ball, because Mike Quick, the Eagles receiver, and Mike Richardson, Bears cornerback, would emerge from the fog into the end zone, turn around, walk back in, and about, next play, they would, you'd see them come out of the fog into the end zone, turn around, walk back in. We finally had to leave. It was insane, that entire experience. It's just something you'll never experience again. And just freak weather conditions, but it was just wild to see how this fog just kind of rolled off the lake into the stadium.
I don't even know how they could see anything in that fog. It was incredible just seeing the video of it. But they played the game.
They played the game, I know.
And that season with the team that the Eagles had would have been a Super Bowl season if it wasn't for that bowl game.
Yeah.
I don't see it was that they were that good. Randall Cunningham was that he is the modern day equivalent in talent to a Patrick Mahomes with the breakout speed of a Lamar Jackson. I mean, he was wrapped up like that. They called him Gumby at times from the University of UNLV. So that game right there would have been amazing to see, but apparently you couldn't see too much, so you left.
I couldn't see too much anyway. The scoreboard, the PA announcer was starting to let everybody know how each play had ended and what had happened on each play, because nobody could see. That was it.
Was he down on the field?
Yeah.
Was he down on the field to see it?
He was probably getting things relayed to him.
Okay.
And going from there.
That game now would be canceled or postponed, wouldn't it?
Of course it would. Yeah. Should have been then.
Well, things were different back in the 80s, if you hadn't figured it out. Our haircuts were better than today. That's all I can say. Thank you, Mr. Tom, for coming on. Send me an email with all your information on it, and I'll put that on the show notes so we can get you get more people reading your stuff, if that can help.
That's great. I appreciate it very much.
You are the reason why I love doing this show. You are the reason, because of your love for history, your love for your sports, and the ability to laugh at memories and just enjoy those things. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And again, thank y'all for listening to the Football's Family Podcast.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.